Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael here. How are you today? I am doing great. If you want to talk to me about how you're doing and how I'm doing and the issues of the day, you can give me a call right now, toll free, 833-4MY-NEWS, 833-4MY-NEWS. That's 469-6397, 833-469-6397. Today, I'm going to be talking about something that was in the news recently that everybody was screaming about, and there was a lot of in-flight entertainment while the national plane was in a nosedive. So I'm going to talk about deferred action for childhood arrivals. I was talking to a young man the other day as I'm driving him to school, and he asked me about this, and he was complaining about the president, and he was complaining about these guys and that guys. And I said, well, actually, I think this is what it was. He was saying something about what his teacher said about the president shutting down the government or something. And so essentially asked, well, what's all that about? And I said, it's really just kind of drama. They're doing the frenzy about the DACA thing, the frenzy of the mainstream media that let's ride this machinery, let's ride this animal of division. You know, that's let's keep the frenzy going because that's what really gets people entertained and they get all excited and they have discussions during lunch and things like that over this. But nobody's really talking about the facts and what it's really about. In fact, DACA, you know, D-A-C-A, DACA, it refers to Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals is what people have named DACA. And actually, there's nothing such as the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, it turns out. That's kind of an urban legend name. In fact, it's not a law. It's not a executive order. It turns out it was a memorandum. So how much power does a memorandum have in law? And so what is really the issue? And Tennessee jumped on a lawsuit to try to stop this DACA thing. So, and then they were one of 10 states that filed suit against this DACA, asking it for to go away. And then there were 15 states that filed suit against the president because he made the DACA go away. So here I'm making all these comments, and you know what? Nobody, there are very few of us know what this is all about, really, what the details are. So here I am on my preservative talk radio having to do the homework. Come on, what is this all about anyway? The big thing in the news, obviously, coming up to the weekend was this facade, this kind of illusion of the government shutdown coming up. Now, it was going to affect some people. I think there's certain people, if the payday had been around the time of the quote-unquote shutdown, I think you would have had a lot more concern. But since it was well after the 15th and well before the 1st, I think most people were thinking, well, this fog is going to clear before it affects my paycheck. In fact, I know some people, they were telling me, their friends, we're going to just go ahead and take the day off on Monday. And if they get called in, they're called in, but they're going to have a long weekend. And I wonder if they got called in about midday when the law was passed that had a continued resolution for spending. I don't know. You may know more about that. Of course, if you do know more about that personally, firsthand, you can give me a call, toll-free 833-469-6397. That's 833-4MY-NEWS. So I did some homework, and what I did is I called up the original memorandum. So this was by Janet Napolitano way back when, came out with a memorandum. Why would she come out with a memorandum? Well, it turns out that this job to regulate the import of human beings in the United States of America falls on the shoulders of the Congress. And today, yes, today I've been up since 4:11 in the morning reading this stuff. I went ahead and read the United States Code with regard to immigration. And, you know, they've got some wonderful laws in there. Really, really good stuff. You can tell these people at one time or another had really sat down and done some math and figured out what they wanted to do in Congress regarding immigration. And I was really quite impressed when I was reading the law. I probably won't read. I may or may not read some of it to you, but if I really have to, I must. But I think I can dodge it just by summary here. as I was reading it and I was seeing how they've made an account for, there was a point in history where too many people were flooding into the country from certain places and weren't integrating. This was in the past. And so Congress began to really get involved in making laws on the regulation of the import of people. And they have also since in the last 100 years made laws that account for people who are running away from persecution. And those people can come in without a quota. So if you can come in, if you can show to this country, you come knocking on our doors and you're looking for the land of the free and the home of the brave, you can come knock on the doors and say, hey, listen, I'm being chased by this wicked person and they're trying to kill me and my family and my people group. Could you please let us in? Okay. Those people don't fall under a quota. And as I'm saying that, it just occurred to me that in the quota system and the thing where they were saying, oh, we'll let in 50,000 people a year in a lottery. You know, we'll just put their name in a hat. And we'll just pick them without discretion and we'll just let them into the country. The current president was saying, you know, we ought to be thinking about focusing it on the people groups that are really being chased out of their own homeland. And they're being persecuted and enslaved and tortured like Yazidis, you know, in Iraq and in Syria and certain groups that are being attacked and killed and enslaved. We might think about that. Well, it turns out those people, if they do have that situation and can come knock on the doors, that there is no quota for that group. Now, how many people knew that? So I think that's a pretty sound approach to the American view of how we take care of and we import human beings. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read this DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood, which actually is not named that. That's the urban legend name for it. This is the memo from Janet Napolitano said, listen to this, exercising, oh boy, a prosecutorial discretion. I said that right. With respect to individuals who came to the United States as children, exercising prosecutorial discretion with respect to individuals who came to the United States as children. And in summary, what this did, they said, hey, people have to enforce the laws of people and borders. Don't spend all your energy. I mean, the summary of this memo, if you read it, it's pretty benign, and it is clearly somewhat within a discretion of the king, you know, that it would fall within technically a constitutional power of enforcement of the law that Congress made. So it sort of falls in there in the way it's written, but the way it was applied became unconstitutional. And we'll get to that. Here we go. Janet Napolitano. By this memorandum, I'm setting forth how, in the exercise of our prosecutorial discretion, the Department of Homeland Security should enforce the nation's immigration laws against certain young people who were brought into this country as children and know only this country as home. Now, I'm going to step back a bit because what we do here at Preservative Talk Radio and Nuga Radio for our listener is we go do the homework on this stuff. We do the research and we go way back in history and we get all the information. We bring it to you in a little package so it's palatable. That's our hope. One of the things, if you've gone ahead and read, the Federalist Papers, as if they were a novel, if you've done that, you would have known, yes, you would have, had you seen that movie or read that book, that it contemplates the fact that there's going to be laws that the Congress comes out with that there's just not enough money to do, that they don't, in fact, the states aren't mandated to actually carry out the congressional acts. They don't have any power to force an officer in Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia. They don't have the power, the congressional power, the constitutional power to force any of your officers to actually go out and fulfill and execute a congressional law. They actually have to come up with their own officers or entice our officers to actually execute the law, and they entice it with money. Hey, y'all, could you come on up here and could you execute this law of Congress? We've got some money here. Any of you state officers willing to do that? You states, you willing to free up some of these officers to enforce this congressional law? It's fulfilling the big plan of the big country. Anybody want to do that? We've got some money here. So they can do that. They can't force the states to carry it out. A lot of people don't know that. You can read Prince and Mack versus the United States. It's a great read. And I guess you got to love that sort of stuff. So that's what we do here at Preservative Talk Radio, dig into this to tell you about that. But the point is, there are some prosecutorial discretions, meaning Congress has given us so much money. We've got a bazillion people flooding across the border, you know, whether they're hopping a wall or digging a tunnel or swimming across or there's nothing there or whatever they're doing, they're flooding into the country. So there's more to do than we can do. There's more to do than we have time or talent or money. So what do you do? So this, if you think about it in that way, this memorandum as it's written is fairly benign. It's fairly technically benign, let's say. So let's continue to read what Janet Napolitano said. As a general matter, these individuals lack the intent to violate the law, and our ongoing review of pending removal cases is already offering administrative closure to many of them. What are they talking about that? Is that just Janet Napolitano's subjective view? Uh-uh. It turns out, what did I do since 4:11 this morning? I was reading the history of law on this matter, and I went to Blackstone's commentaries on the law about enforcing of crimes. And it goes through and it describes who is it that you can prosecute in law. You can only prosecute those people who know they were doing wrong. So here's this 17-year-old who was brought here when he was 14 or 13 or 12 or whatever it is, and the kid has not a clue. He's not of an age in the history of law that the kid knows right from wrong. How do you prosecute him? You can't. So why? So if you look at this objectively and technically, and not as it's some kind of insidious intent to undermine the Constitution, if you don't look at it that way, you just look at it technically, it makes sense. Okay, don't expend your resources on prosecuting somebody who's not prosecutable. So far, so good. However, she says, and additional measures are necessary to ensure that our enforcement resources are not expended on these low priority cases, but are instead appropriately focused on people who meet our enforcement priorities. This memo makes sense. Bless their hearts. I wish people in America would read this and know what's going on. So here's the criteria. And one of the things before I go into this, I do want to say that I've been looking at the website. I'm trying to get into the governor's kind of plan there. I want to know what Tennessee, you complained about this, and I commend you. And Georgia also. No, Tennessee and Alabama. Georgia didn't take sides either way as far as these court cases go. But Tennessee and Alabama said, hey, we need to stop this DACA thing. Just for a future show, I'd like to have somebody from the governor's office tell us what Tennessee and Alabama's needs are. What are they specifically? What is the desire of the government, of the state, of we the people? And what is your intention with this? And I'm going to put that for a later date so we don't get flooded with it all at once. But here's the criteria considered for this exercise of prosecutorial discretion pursuant to this memorandum. And again, I'm going to come back to the wall issue and whether what ought we to be thinking about immigration and this situation. Okay, we're accountable to something other than Republican or Democrat, aren't we? Aren't we? Obviously, the Constitution. And when we step back a little bit further, we've got a creator that has an opinion on this and has actually expressed it. So what should our opinion be according to that? But here's this criteria about somebody to be considered for an exercise of prosecutorial discretion pursuant to this memorandum. Again, not even an executive order here. This is a department head memorandum. The person has to have come to the United States under the age of 16. In my history of law studies, that's actually somewhat an arbitrary number. I'd like to see where they're finding that threshold, what the criteria was for that. Because in the history of law, somebody under the age of 15 was usually not prosecuted for these administrative rules. They were in the age of puberty. From 7 to 14 is the age of puberty, believe it or not, in law. And we had a Bible study on Sunday, and we were talking about Joash, and they pulled him out of hiding and made him king and put away Ataliah when Joash was 7. And everybody asked, why 7? I said, well, and I gave him the anecdote, my experience of raising 4 kids. They actually have their wits about them by 7. I just noticed they actually change their personality and become little people, right? Instead of just little infants. But it's just interesting in history of law that 7 to 14 was the age of puberty, where you're developing the reason. And there's certain things you can be held accountable for, but you really can't, they're still not held accountable up to the age of 14. Interesting in the history of law. So here it is, they say, got to be 16, have continuously resided in the United States for at least 5 years preceding the date of the memorandum. It is present in the United States on the date of this memorandum. Is currently in school, has graduated from high school, has obtained a general education development certificate, or is an honorably discharged veteran of the Coast Guard or Armed Forces of the United States. Isn't that interesting? You serve in the military, notwithstanding your immigration status. Has not been convicted of a felony offense, a significant misdemeanor offense, multiple misdemeanor offenses, or otherwise poses a threat to national security or public safety. You've got to be somebody who submits to the law of the land effectively, not just the legal paperwork of whether somebody filled out a form when you were brought across the border, but are you ultimately literally complying with the laws of the king on the land that have to do with loving your neighbor as yourself? And is also here, it says not above the age of 30. Well, if you go back to 30 years ago, 1986. Yeah, 1986 was the last time that Congress passed a law that specifically talked about what some might call, I can't even think of the word, but I'll just keep talking. Whenever in 1986, Reagan came out with a plan that basically kept people off the hook, right? So just give them a place. Hey, if you've been here, you've been getting along, you've been behaving yourself, let's let Congress exercise their power to cut you some slack over the legal paperwork issue and give you some right to stick around here as long as you're behaving the laws of the king. Amnesty. There's the big word, amnesty. There you go. So here we are. So now, so this is Janet Napolitano's memo, and it's a pretty long memo. And at the very end of it, to try to stay within its quasi-constitutional power of this executive agent, it says, this memorandum confers no substantive right, immigration status, or pathway to citizenship. Only the Congress, acting through its legislative authority, can confer these rights. Thank you, Janet. It remains for the executive branch, however, to set forth policy for the exercise of discretion within the framework of the existing law. I have done so here. And that's true. This is actually a great memo. And if it was just carried out like a memo and not turned into a program that people had to apply for, that's where the shift happened. Where all of a sudden they created this comprehensive program where people applying for it, when you apply for something, you have a property right in the application. See Heller versus, or District of Columbia versus Heller. So somebody somewhere in this program turned on a substantive right in an application process. There's the danger. And it went well beyond the powers that this memorandum has or even expressly stated. What happened was somebody mentioned it to the people in charge. Hey, this is unconstitutional. You have now legislated through an executive agency's memorandum, something that is limited by the Constitution of the United States to the power of Congress. So that's the real problem. Now, what, you know, President Trump's getting a bad rap on this, because if you look at what he did, he just said, hey, in 6 months, I'm going to make this program go away. We're not going to do it like a hitting a brick wall. You're going to taper this thing down. You're not going to accept any new applications. And in, by March of 2018, that Congress, you better get your act together and do some comprehensive immigration reform on the immigration laws. Figure out what the law should be, what should be happening in the states. Do your job. Quit your partisan squabbling. That's essentially what happened. He says, I'm going to nip the effects of this memo in the bud very carefully, lovingly, graciously, giving you 6 months to deal with it, because it violates the Constitution and it's become a dangerous innovation that is interfering with state rights. So that is my take on DACA as I got up this morning at 4:11 in the morning and said, I'm going to hunker down and read DACA, which it turns out there's no DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. It is a memo from Janet Napolitano saying, exercising prosecutorial discretion with respect to individuals who came to the United States as children. That's what it is. It's a memo. And instead of just exercising prosecutorial discretion, somebody turned it into a program that you could, for which you could apply. How's that for dodging that preposition ending there? So what I want to do here, and we're going to come back to this, and I want to talk about the authority of law in any issue of the day. And we're not going to do the he said, she said. Well, I sort of did the she said because I read the memo. But I don't want to do the, Schumer is the evil man. He might be an evil man, you know? I mean, I'm not the judge of that. But it's, or the Trump, this is a Trump shutdown. Ridiculous. They told Trump, we're not going to sign this, we're not going to approve spending unless you write a document that says you're going to extend an unconstitutional program. Okay, I wouldn't do it if I were him, but here we're going to come back. Preservative Talk Radio, stick around. Hello, Freedom Fans. I'm back again, David Allen Carmichael, Preservative Talk Radio on this Nuga Radio. My number here is 833-4MY-NEWS. That's for you to remember, that toll-free, that rhymes with 833-4MY-NEWS. That's 469-6397, 833-469-6397. Today I'm talking about what some refer to as DACA, dependent or deferred something of children who got across the border. Okay, it turns out that that is not DACA. It was the urban legend name. It's actually not deferred action for childhood arrivals. It's exercising prosecutorial discretion with respect to individuals who came to the United States as children. As we were talking about earlier, is if you read the memo just in itself without seeing what happened with it, it's not actually insane. Now, the effects, this, it turns out to be an innovation that had some dangerous effects. Now, Tennessee and Alabama got in a letter saying, we respectfully request that the Secretary of Homeland Security phase out the DACA program. And so those people were Arkansas, Alabama, Idaho, Kansas, Louisiana, Nebraska, South Carolina, Tennessee, West Virginia, and Idaho, as well as it was Texas that drafted the letter. There was a lawsuit now, states for DACA. Once they, the current president of the United States came out with a policy that says this DACA memo is dead. It's going to die in March of 2018. Congress, get your act together, do legislation, do your job, because I'm turning this thing off. It is a dangerous innovation that's causing damage to the states, and it is something that is needs to go away. We're going to do it lovingly and openly, but do your job. So that's effectively what's going on. And again, a certain faction of a political faction in America tried to hold our spending, basically hostage unless the president would come up with a new letter and draft a letter that would just advance this memo that was having unconstitutional and a negative impact on the law of the land and the execution of it. But again, the memo itself was relatively benign until they turned it into a program that you could make an application. As soon as you have an application, people don't realize this, but you have a property right now in the application, and that is judiciable. That's a mess. States for DACA. Okay, I already talked about that. Now, this is what I want to do. What's the right and wrong about it? We know we've read the Constitution of the United States that the people and the United States and the states covenanted together to operate things a certain way for the sake of loving their neighbor as ourself way back. So what is the right and wrong about it? What do you do about your neighbor? There's a wall. There are walls in the southern border of this country. Last month, I had to go into Canada, and that was interesting. But I went into Canada, and my paperwork isn't like everybody else's, so I had long, wonderful conversations with people who were strangers and now my friends at the border on both sides. So that was very interesting. But I had to go to Canada, and I liked the scrutiny that they put on it. I think they were respectful. They treated me with honor, but they also treated me with great scrutiny and allowed me into their country knowing I was going to be back out of the country a few hours later. So, and I love the scrutiny they put, but for the most part, you see Canadians, if they cross the border because there's no, you know, I mean, the lands are connected. So you can walk across the border in Canada to America. But most people are doing that. They're obeying the laws. They're not staying over. They might visit a neighbor across the border. I mean, it's a different place. It's a different perspective. But when you get to the southern border of America, there's people, it's an invasion. It's an international invasion of the United States of America from people all over the southern, basically from Mexico south. And it's an unfiltered border. There are gates there that you can come through officially. But what's happening is a huge flood of people that are doing illicit business of trafficking humans to make money. There's a lot of people don't realize they could probably just come knock on the door, fill out a form, and then enter the country because there's somebody they know in the country. There's a whole bunch of there's actually provisions for getting into the country legally. There really are. There's a lot of people that will say you're either going to pay us and we will get you through illegally, or I'm going to make you or your family member pay. There's a lot of corruption that's happening with regard to this trafficking of people. There's also like slavery trafficking, especially of young girls. And this needs to be policed. One of the ways to do it is build a wall. So you make it much more difficult for people to come across the border like that, make them have to come through the funnel of the border crossing and do it legally. It decreases the amount of illicit, unlawful trafficking in the country of Mexico, for one. There's a whole lot of benefits to it. It's a little bit weird, but if you look at the Great Wall of China, you can see it from outer space. It's not a new innovation. It's something that, in fact, I just saw a statistic on the offensive by many people, a very offensive wall in the occupied areas around Jerusalem. And what they have just declared in 2017, that they had 0% illegal trafficking of people across the border, that the wall was effective. It's offensive to many. I'm not there. I don't live there. I don't know the issues there. But it is effective, technically effective, to keep people from just coming in and out against the law illegally. And at the time, a lot of people were bringing bombs with them. So they have a serious issue there. So technically, a wall is something that is reasonable. If you have a country and the state has an obligation to protect its borders and to be a phobic, to fear other countries, that's the requirement, is to fear other countries. Their xenophobia is a requirement because it's actually not irrational. It's rational. It's actually the duty of the government to presume that there you have to be in a position of defense. Presuming that, then they can negotiate, make friends with other countries from a position of strength. But they have an obligation, the state does, to actually protect you by protecting your border. That's my opinion. Now, it's something to think about. Now, what does the Bible say? Now, watch this. What should my opinion be on immigration? I read the Bible. It's not the Constitution that gives you your opinion on immigration. It's not your lust for property or whatever. It's nothing of that should give us the opinion on immigration. There's a higher law. What does the revealed law tell us about immigration? Whether we like it or not, this is what it says. There's a whole bunch of thou shalt nots in the Bible. Some of those we wish weren't there, but they are. So let's just see what it says. Here's the Bible on immigrants. This is Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 9. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. This goes into what we were talking about yesterday, is our personal duty to take care of the least of these, not the government's duty to police it. But this is our duty, is revealed in the Bible. So we leave things, we don't take up everything in the field. If some apples fall off the tree and they roll aside and we don't gather them up, leave it there and have somebody, some poor person come by and exercise the labor necessary to pick it up and eat it. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the what? And the stranger. What is the stranger? That is the immigrant. And this is how it closes in Deuteronomy 19, verse 10. I am the Lord your God, Jehovah Elohim, right? Here's Deuteronomy 19:14. You shall have one statute for both the resident alien and the native. Look at that. The resident alien. That's a real word, you, or set of words. You shall have one statute for both the resident alien and the native. So we're supposed to treat anybody on the land the same way. It's equal justice under the law. The law of the land, it affects everybody. It touches everyone. Here's Deuteronomy 19, verse 33. And if a stranger dwells with you in your land, you shall not mistreat him. What? If a stranger dwells in your land, you shall not mistreat him. What if he came across the border illegally? Well, should somebody run you off the road if you're speeding? Okay, it turns out that the level of law that somebody's breaking when they don't come in filling out the paperwork, it turns out, you may not know this, but it's the same level as you going 10 miles or 11 miles over the speed limit. How vindictive ought you to be with somebody who's going 11 miles over the speed limit? You know, if he gets pulled over, he's going to pay the tax. Don't stick your nose in their business. Allow them to pay the tax and let the enforcement proceedings proceed. But you don't treat them like dirt. There's an accountability for things that people do, for those kind of those misdeeds or whatever miscreant motivation they have. It's going to get taken care of. Listen to what it says. You shall have one statute for both the resident and the native. And if a stranger dwells with you in your land, you shall not mistreat him. All right. You know why? Here's another thing. This is a little bit interesting. That stranger was created in the image of God. That person there has the image of the living God. And that should be, and I think we would remember that, it motivates us to love them as ourselves, because they are a person of great honor, aren't they? Wow. Man, you're in the image of God. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Look how this redundant closing again. It says, I am the Lord your God. This is serious. When you see this thing closing up, this phrase that says, I am the Lord your God, this is serious stuff. This is an endorsement saying, remember what I just said there. Don't mess with this. If a stranger dwells with you in your land, you should not mistreat him. Stranger who dwells among you shall beat you as one born among you. You shall love him as yourself, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. I have one more to read here. But this is something I haven't said here this year, but I mentioned that our freedom comes in proportion to our faith. You know how that we have the home of the free and the brave? For the land of the free and the home of brave, right? The land of the free and the home of the brave. And I say that our freedom comes in proportion to our faith. It takes, you know, it takes bravery to act in faith. It takes courage to act in faith, to do what you know you ought to do, notwithstanding what you fear, notwithstanding what your neighbor says, notwithstanding what the political faction says, notwithstanding the inconveniences of society or whatever it might be, the loss of your job, demotion, attack. To do the thing that is right, it takes bravery. It takes courage. And I say the land of the free, because they're the home of the brave, if we would be the land of the brave, we're going to experience freedom. It's going to be cause and effect. It's going to be fruit of our labor. And I say all these principles that you see in the Bible that say do things the following way, it takes bravery. Because sometimes it doesn't make sense to us. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to our neighbor or the strong political faction in our area. But if we would, by faith, do what the revealed law tells us to do, be obedient to it, stand back and watch what happens. That's what I'm telling you. Our freedom's going to come in proportion to our faith, whether we like it or not. Therefore, now this is the next verse I have. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 10. And it says, therefore, so God is told everybody to behave themselves. He says, therefore, circumcise the foreskin of your heart and be stiff-necked no longer. That's what our job is, and my job is. I come to Preservative Talk Radio, and the first time I ever did a topic on immigration, I changed my perspective because I said, well, what does the Constitution say? What does the federal regulations say? I read the federal regulations. I read the Bible. I revealed the revealed law, and all of a sudden I thought, wow, I've got to circumcise the foreskin of my heart and be stiff-necked no longer. I need to conform to a higher norm. And so here it goes on to say in Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 17, for the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords. That's a big redundant statement there. the great God, mighty and awesome, another redundancy is trying to make a point, who shows no partiality nor takes a bribe. He administers justice for the fatherless and the widow. And listen to this. This is powerful stuff. And loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing. Therefore, love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. In America, it's a land of strangers, isn't it? Isn't this a land of strangers? So it's not to be, you don't want to take the side of the flaming liberal or whatever, who's undermining the Constitution, who's not just writing a memo that is sound and fits within the prerogative of the king, but then creates a program that completely undermines the Constitution of the United States. Don't take that route. And take note that you are loving your neighbor Mexico and your neighbor Guatemala and whoever else. When you build a war, it's possible to love your neighbor by building a wall so that people can't just come flooding across there without counting the cost, without a serious check in their passion. So you may be loving your neighbor as yourself by building a wall. And then be in the fact of how you deal with these immigrants, you do it lovingly. You do it with strength, and you do it with power, and you do it with very great care. And you bring the stranger in and you love them. And if they misbehave, then you hold them accountable according to the law. That's my take on it. Now, the number here is 833-4MY-NEWS. That's 833-4MY-NEWS, 469-6397. And all of this went back to the big, just horrible debate that would happen this last week. And everything in the news was just total insane. It was just blasting urban legend. Schumer's evil, the president of the United States. This is the Trump shutdown, Mr. Schumer said. This is a shutdown by President Trump. What a liar. Okay, I shouldn't call him a liar. Let's say what a lie. His nature may not be one of a liar. Let's just say that the statement was not even... I've seen some executives saying factual statements that lead to a falsehood. Yeah, I mean, they're intentionally designed to lead you to a false understanding using factual statements. I've seen some just some savvy executives in the very recent past be saying those kind of things in public to lead everybody to a lie. Now, this statement by Mr. Schumer is an absolute lie. This isn't President Trump's shutdown. It's not. Think about it. All it is this memo came out a couple of years back. It's had a negative effect. It had the effect of turning it into an application program, which ended up legislating something that was outside the authority of the executive agent. If I were the president of the United States, I would nip this in the bud. He could have done it immediately. He said, boom, that's it. This thing's unlawful. It's done. It's over. He could have done an executive order shutting that thing down. But what he did was he said, listen, this thing's a mess. We got to shut it down. We have to. In good faith, in good conscience, I have to shut this thing down. I'm going to do it keeping in mind that this mess is something that can't just go away. It was created by my predecessor. So I'm going to shut it down in 6 months. So Congress, you've got 6 months to do what is right. Do your job. You need to look at our situation and do immigration reform as it ought to happen, as a matter of your duty to love your nation, who is your neighbor, as yourself. But this DACA thing, what everybody called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, was actually a memo from Janet Napolitano, which was called Exercising Prosecutorial Discretion with Respect to Individuals Who Came to the United States as Children. Now, this is a much bigger conversation because they also have this DAPA, D-A-P-A kind of phrase that's talking about parents who have children who were born here. So that comes with a whole different thing. Let's say you invade the land. That's like invasion of the body snatchers, right? You come in and invade the land. You plant a child on it. They plant a seed and then you become the tree. You know, so there's a whole lot of weird things going on with this. And that's a much bigger discussion. The point is, what we have to do, our responsibility as people, that's us here. And I'm trying to think of a way. I want to talk to the executive agents of Tennessee and Georgia and Alabama and find out, this is over, you know, in a couple of weeks from now, to get them to tell us, what do you care about immigration? How is it impacting the people in this area, in the Nuga Radio, the Nuga Radio enclave of sanity? How is it affecting those who actually want to make sure that, their agents in government are actually acting responsibly on their behalf? So I'd like to interview them. I know when this healthcare thing came out, I kept hearing lieutenant governors, all kinds of people saying, well, we know there's a problem with healthcare. Okay, what problem? When I interviewed a guy from Florida, the Florida Medical Association, he explained that it was going to be horrible to those people who lived in Florida, that the needs of Florida on healthcare did not match Obamacare. It did not match. It was a great, horrible thing that was coming. Now, what were the needs of Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia? I think they're different. Every state's different, but nobody ever articulated of any of the state leadership what was the particular problem that needed to be addressed. They just kept repeating the mantra because it was popular. We know there's a problem with healthcare, as if they cared. It made them seem as if they cared. Sometimes signing a letter from one governor to the Department of Homeland Security makes it seem as if you care. But what is the problem? What is your concern? And again, that's what we're going to have to do here at Preservative Talk Radio over the next several months. Do our homework, use our due diligence, because can we all do it? Do we have all the leisure that I had to get up at 4:11 this morning and read this crazy stuff? No, that's why I'm here. I am a minister of God for your good, and I'm going to do the homework on this stuff, whether I like it or not, whether I enjoy it or not. But again, it's a function of what I've been called to do here at Preservative Talk Radio. Find out more about me if you want to hear some of the shows that we've done in the past. Go to PreservativeTalkRadio.com. That's PreservativeTalkRadio.com. And my name is David Allen Carmichael. Looking forward to coming back tomorrow with something exciting and adventuresome for you. Hopefully, I might even have a story of divine intervention. That's what I always hope for. Maybe I'll experience one today I can bring back tomorrow.